C3, number 2A.
I came across one of the watches which Mrs. Eddy gave at her time, and in one of them she said the following. She said, "Take time each day to say, what is the most powerful thing in the world?" We all like that, the most powerful thing in the world. And our answer is, it is God saying, "I am in his own creation." See, it wasn't just saying the most powerful thing in the world is when God says, "I am." Because the world reflects, includes the Christ and includes Christianity, the reflection of the "I am." So it is the "I am" in the creation. It's the "I am" of man. What is the most powerful thing in the world? Therefore, she wants to say, in my terminology, is to see that there is something constantly affirming itself in the infinitude of being, which says, "I am in every event, the I am." And so she goes on and says, any event is every event, and "I am" is the law of it. So we begin to realize whatever happens, whatever the event is, any event is every event. And we have all sorts of events, events which we like and which we don't like. But the fact is, that there where that event is, no matter if we term it good or bad, it is the "I am" in his creation. It's the "I am" as the law at work. There is never anything going on but God and his idea. There is never anything going on but the "I am." The "I am" of mind, of spirit, of soul, of principle, of life, of truth, and of love. We can believe it or reject it. That's our business. That's not business of the being, of the oneness of being. The oneness of being says, "I am what I am." And then she gives a very nice fourfold statement of this "I am" and says, "I am because thou art mine." Is "I am." The second, "I am what thou art." Mind is "I am." The third, "I am where thou art." Mind is "I am." And then the fourth, "I am one with thee, mind, O thou infinite, I am," and capitalizes it at the end. So you see how she worded it and showed the "I am" as the Word and as the Christ and as Christianity and as science, and all that together is the capitalized "I am." So the "I am," the capitalized "I am" that is what it is, the "I am that I am," is always expressing itself as the Word who says, "I am, because thou art." As the Christ, "I am what thou art." As Christianity, "I am where thou art," the ever-presence of it. And as science, "I am one with thee, O mind." Now, when we have seen this clearly, then we could deduce from this wonderful statement an infinite deduction by taking this through every synonymous term, because every synonymous term stands for God. Therefore, the I, or ego, the I am of mind, has always its four classifications. It's always mind saying, I manifest myself out of myself, the world. I manifest myself through myself, never through anything exterior to mind. Never. Or we would lose the oneness of being. And mind saying Christianity, I manifest myself as myself, never as anything else. Mind can never be anything else but what it is. It never loses its divine identity. And so in science, says mind says, I manifest myself to myself as one, or in myself as one. Let's just take a few references to show how in the textbook these points are brought out. I only take mind. But as it is with mind, actually we could take it with any other synonymous term. First, mind, so to say, manifesting itself as out of itself. She says, God is his own infinite mind. See, she states first the word and says, God is his own infinite mind. Defines itself first as what he himself is. As a Christ, we could see that mind manifests itself always through itself. Never through anything else. Never through anything exterior, outside of itself. Because mind has no outside. It's one. It's noumenon and phenomena. So it can never manifest itself through anything but itself. It says, for instance, that very clear passage, the distinction between that which is and that which is not law must be made by mind and as mind. She says, that which can see and distinguish and perceive what is law and what is not law is done not only by mind, but also by its own capacity of being mind, as mind. So it reveals itself as mind. That's why we have mind, divine mind reading, which is the reading from mind as mind. Divine mind reading really is not trying to read anything with the divine mind through our knowledge of mind. Divine mind reading is mind knowing itself through itself. It's not we knowing the divine mind. It's mind, the divine mind reading, in comparison to mortal mind reading, human mind reading, and so on, is the revelation of the divine purpose, as she says. It's showing that only mind, God, can read itself through itself. God cannot use any exterior, can you say, external means or channels through which to read itself. And that's quite a great point, because we sometimes try to read a situation through what we know about mind. Or Christianity, where she shows, where we had that mind manifests itself as itself, never as anything else, never through anything outside foreign to itself. She says the divine mind creates all identities, and they are forms of mind apparent only as mind. They appear again only as what mind is, as mind. Or she says, mind dwells in the realm of mind, capital M. It dwells in its own realm. Therefore it manifests itself and reveals itself as itself. She says, if mind is within and without all things, there is nothing outside, then all, small L, small A, all is mind, capital M. It is not in the word you could say that mind is all and put it in a capital A, but here she shows that mind really reflects itself in all, small A, but as what? As mind. It is a wonderful indication that whatever will be the reflection, whatever will be the expression, whatever will be the event, it is always the event of the I am. The I am mind. The I am spirit. And therefore every event will be the I am which contains the whole of God. Or in science, the fourth point, where we see that mind manifests itself always to itself as one. And we have such well-known statement where she says, mind is one in italics, including nomenon and phenomenon, both. So there isn't anything going on from eternity to eternity, but God revealing itself, manifesting itself, out of itself, through itself, as itself, and to itself. Yes. So, if we perhaps summarize these four points and see how Mrs. Eddy would also indicate it, we can just see that therefore we have no mind of our own. There's no mind of our own. Not even a mortal mind of our own. We have just no mind of our own. Because the only mind there is God. So man, one with God, man has no separate mind from God, she says. If he has no separate mind from God, who is mind? Then she can say on another page, man has no mind, capital M, but God. Man has no mind, capital M, but God. You know how wonderful that is? We know that each one has no other mind but God, and then we approach him as God. As if he... Well, that's not correct, but you might... difficult to express, but we approach him and say, by golly, there is the I am in expression. It isn't the mortal which I have to see right or wrong or so and so. It's the I am. He has no mind. He cannot have any other mind but God. Man has no mind, capital M, but God. So that she says in another reference, the mind, capital M, of the spiritual man is God. Yes. If we see that, then Mrs. Eddy says, take time each day. How did she say? Take time each day to say what is the most powerful thing in the world. And then it is God saying, I am in his own creation, I am in God's creation. Well, then we can do our dailies. We know our system, we know our synonymous term, and we can expand that and expand that. And perhaps for the beginning we can do it very simply but profoundly and see, all right, the mind that is God is the same mind as the mind of man. I begin to realize that therefore the Spirit, which is God, is the same Spirit which is the Spirit of man. Think how I begin to trust everything that happens. But I know that everything happens along the order and development of the one Spirit. I'm no more going to trust if the other one is going to good or evil, a good fellow or not. I'm going to trust that the I am is mine. Therefore, intelligence, an intelligent manifestation, an intelligent action. I'm going to trust that his I am is Spirit, and that therefore that I am will unfold orderly, correctly, nicely, gently, patiently. I know that soul, which is God, is the same soul that is the soul of man. I know, therefore, that the sinlessness of man is the sinlessness of God. And if I see the wonderful unchangeability and sinlessness and identity of soul, I stand in awe before man, who is I am, the I am of soul, the sinlessness of soul. And so we can go to principle and see, well, that principle which is God is the same principle which is the principle of man. So I don't need to fear that anyone is governed differently than by the I am principle. So you take life, say, well, that life, which is God, is no other life but that life which is man. The same life as the life of man. So why should we stand aghast at destruction, death, corruption? There is nothing going on but the I am of life. Because no matter what happens, the I am is life. And that I am is untouchable because it is soul. And so the truth that is God is the same truth that is the truth of man, of the I am man. And the love, the true love, which is God, is the same love that is the love of man. And what all that means will come gently, quietly, in a big way, in a gentle way, in a great way, in a mighty way, in a confident way, in a comforting way. And as one begins to ponder this one being of I am in this way, you will see that something changes. One begins to get a quite different standpoint. We arise from metaphysics into science. It's no more thinking ideas, thinking what ideas should I use, which are the right idea. It's going back to the one I am, the one mind, revealing itself. Through itself, not through my thinking, as itself. Therefore, mind gives me the right idea. Mind gives his idea, and they do the job. And it is always mind revealing itself, manifesting itself for the whole purpose of glorifying itself, for no other glorification, because it always turns back to itself. Now, this is the introduction with which I wanted to point out those two main points, namely that being is one, and that second, we have to wed metaphysics to science, to the oneness. Now, if being is one, and if that one being is not just a clumsy lump of one unit, but an infinite one which must be understood through its principle and that principle through its system, then that infinite one should show its oneness in 16 main aspects, fundamental aspects. Namely, if the Christian Science textbook gives us the whole system and science of being, then each chapter of the textbook must give us a differentiated sense of, first, oneness, and second, must meet with that a differentiated sense of dualism or pluralism. Did I make myself clear about that? If we just can't say there is one and no duality, if we have to go further and give it the foundation of science, which is diversification, then oneness is a diversified sense of oneness, so that each chapter in the textbook gives a different aspect of oneness. And through giving a different aspect of oneness, naturally, it corrects a different sense of dualism. Now, that was the subject I had in view for Princeton, to go through the 16 chapters and show, on the basis of what we have been considering just now, how this oneness is shown in completely different ways in each chapter. This was rather a new subject to me when I decided a few months ago to come here and decide that that would be the subject, because at that time I didn't know anything about this 16 differentiation of oneness. I had, in the very few hours that were left to me, go over the whole textbook a few times, quietly, listening, to find out, just perhaps in one sentence, what is the claim of dualism in each chapter, and how does Mrs. Eddy correct that sense of dualism with the fact of oneness. And I think you will agree with me that this was too big a job. And so what I'm going to present is what I had in mind, but I want to say that what I present to you is what you would call a tentative attempt. Can you say that? A tentative attempt to crystallize or to distill out of each chapter the fundamental claim of dualism and therefore the fundamental fact of oneness. Now, in presenting that, I may be mistaken here and there. I don't know yet. It because I think these things have to grow over years and they become clearer and more definite and so on. But I felt it is right, even at a premature state, to exchange ideas. And if I say bluntly and honestly, don't take me by the word, and you think it over yourself, and I'm going to think, and I'm prepared to change it, and you are prepared to challenge it and think for yourself, well, I think that's all right. One mustn't always wait until something is so crystal clear that there is no doubt about it. It's anyway no good if one has never any more a doubt about something, because one always should question it, or there is no progress, there is no unfoldment. Therefore, we always go over our fundamentals anew and anew and anew. So, I will go through those 16 chapters, which you know follow the matrix. There are 16 chapters corresponding to the 4x4, and I think most of you know my book on the structure of the Christian Science textbook, where I have shown that this is so, or that I think it is so. But now, after 14 years, or how many years there are since I wrote that book, I want to give you a different presentation without that the old presentation loses its value, because at that time I was showing the textbook as a way of life, as an unfoldment from the first chapter to the last chapter, and now I just want to pinpoint from the point of view of oneness what arguments must be met in each chapter. I may do the first chapter purposely, perhaps a bit at length, so as to give you a sense that, first of all, I know more about than what I say today, and second, that we can put some warmth into this whole subject. If afterwards I have, perhaps this afternoon, to go through 15 chapters in 2 hours, I can't put much warmth into it. I just have to pinpoint and say what is the problem, the themes of it. But inwardly, naturally, these subjects are great, are warm. Just as it says, great is the idea. The travail portentous. That doesn't matter. The promise is big. The promise is that it may help the student, and me especially also, to grow out of metaphysics into science. Let's take prayer. In the prayer, we usually have four factors. No, not usually, always. Four factors which have to be considered. First, there is the petitioned, called God. Second, there is the so-called petitioner, the one who prays. There is third, always a means of how the petitioner reaches the petitioned. Is that clear? Logic. And fourth, we always pray for a purpose, for a result, for an outcome. So fourth, you have always the aim of the prayer, the result of the prayer. So we have four factors. And if there is only one being, then all four factors must be of the same nature of that one being. Or we are not praying in the oneness of being. That's clear too. Therefore, all these four factors must be in the realm of God or of spirit. Just as Jesus said, God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. So the oneness of it will be therein that all these four factors are of the one nature, spirit, or God. That not one of these four factors have any taint which is unlike the oneness of being unlike God. The duality of it would be what? The duality of it would be, say, that there is a petitioner separated from the petitioned. The one who prays and prays up to a God. Or the duality may be that we feel a sense of lack, and through that prayer we want to have that lack filled with the fullness of being. So we go out from a duality of lack and fullness. That's clear too.